Welcome to Reconstructed Faith, a podcast where we talk about truth you can build your life on. We hope to dive into the hard conversations of life and faith and seek out reasonable, substantive answers. My name is Colson Lechner, and I'm joined by Chris Legg and Bryn Starnes. This is Reconstructed Faith.
Well, hey there, everyone. This is Colson Lechner, and before today's episode kicks off, I just wanted to briefly mention that we are dealing with a little bit of internet spottiness during this recording, as well as some small background hum in Bryn's microphone. So when you hear that, know that those are just minor flaws. We're working to get those things resolved, and we hope that you'll still enjoy today's episode, and also that you'll chime into the conversation as well, give us your thoughts, and help us to continue to address things that are important to you. So without any further ado, here's today's episode.
Welcome back to the Reconstructed Faith Podcast. My name is Colson Lechner, joined as always by my partners in crime, Chris Legg and Bryn Starnes. Chris is joining me in the studio. And Bryn, it feels like you're in the studio, but you're at home.
And, oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes. And Bryn, can you just quickly tell us one of the main reasons why you're at home right now?
Big development. Yes, you know, just the next step in my saga of motherhood. I'm potty training and I have a newborn, potty training a toddler and doing newborn life. So in the trenches, they're really good trenches. They're just definitely, labor intensive.
For sure.
So I was like, I probably shouldn't go far from home today, but I'm happy to be back recording with you guys. It's been a while and I missed it. So,
man, I'm looking forward to it too. We had said, you know, there's questions that have come up from conversations that we've had, but we're going to go ahead and start off this podcast just kind of with a catch up and see like, okay, what is kind of the state of the world right now? What are things that we've talked about in the past that, the state of the world, you say?
Exactly.
Oh, still
same
lost,
as always.
Still broken.
Yeah, all jacked
we
up.
Still need a savior.
Luckily, but humans have finally solved all of our problems.
Wow.
Aren't we
finally
amazing?
Did it. We are amazing.
This is our last episode then.
Exactly. I've deconstructed my faith in everything but humans now.
Yeah.
Now I trust humans in all ways.
Yeah.
That's what the evidence seems to support.
That's what it supports for me.
This is our last episode. We're fixed.
No, not quite.
Not quite. There were, oh man, and this will probably come up later. I was listening to a podcast recently, and it'll go back to my app because somebody was talking about deconstructing faith and then reconstructing. And I was like, man, that I love that we're not the only, I know that we're not the only ones using that terminology, but to
right.
hear somebody struggle with that and then, but use that same terminology of like, oh, I needed to reconstruct and I did that work. I'll look that up and whatever. But, so there's some things though that kind of touch on. We're not going to go like super deep in some of these things. Chris, have there been any like celebrity things that have happened recently?
There's been at least a couple, and I'm not even talking about the couple at the Coldplay concert, which
yes,
doesn't really. I don't know anything about their private lives, other than what is no longer private. But I don't know anything about faith or anything like that. I've not done any research. But again, seeing the brokenness of a CEO apparently having an illicit relationship with the director, the executive director of the HR department.
Ironic.
Which,
HR.
Yeah, which I feel like.
Okay, Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts on this and you too, Bryn.
Okay.
Because, you know, specifically talking about that couple from the Coldplay concert.
Right.
I saw a reel. And the person commenting on it, I don't know if they're a trained, you know, therapeutic professional or a counselor or whatever, but he paused it at the moment of realization, which I know a lot of people are doing kind of response videos. And he said something like, hey, look at how these people are responding here. He said, this is where the lie of, oh, this affair is promising me X and Y. This is where it's crumbling down.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're hiding.
Right.
And so I was like, I don't know how, like where your brain goes on that as a counselor or Bryn, where your brain goes as you've walked with friends through marital issues and stuff like that. Kind of, I think that's it was an interesting take. I was like, it's not just embarrassing. It's like, it's enlightening.
Well, it was even, it's so theologically it was such an Adam and Eve moment of like their instinct was to duck and hide and cover and I mean, literally she covers, if I remember correctly, she covers her face. He turns and hides, like, and it, the, you know, there was the part of me that wondered, would we know if this couple existed if they had just behaved normally?
I've wondered the same
thing. So it's like, would anyone have ever noticed? Like, it would one of their family or friends happen to have seen the kiss cam at the Coldplay? Like, I doubt it. I assume that their reaction to being caught is what made this public and maybe known at all, that if they had just been calm. But the person who's creating that reel was right, is that there is the moment where shame hits before thought, where there's a sense of shame and fear and regret that hit. And this was a price they had not counted. And so that to me is what stands out, like such a powerful picture of the decisions we make, especially the moral decisions. They're always going to carry a cost. And a good therapeutic and biblical precept is that we should count costs. Am I willing to pay what this is going to cost me? And, you know, I know there's been a lot of mocking, and of course there is something mockable about it. And at the same time, there is also something very tragic about, I mean, a family has now, at least one family, maybe two, maybe more, has now been devastated. And I mean, I think I've seen pictures that show them with wives and husbands and kids. And so, you know, there's something very tragic about the effects of this type of decision. But no, there is a moment when they realize they're on the camera and their decision is they have an instinctive shame response. At least the response of, I don't want to be caught here, but it was too late to do anything about that. They had already made the decision to be in a public place, in a public setting, in that same way, and being obviously romantically together, and then someone caught it. And so, you know, it's like, that is a big deal. That was the old youth minister line that I grew up with, that sin will always, if I can say it right, sin will always take you further than you meant to go, keep you longer than you meant to stay, and cost you more than you meant to pay. And that was, I mean, it really was a fig leaf moment for them. I mean, it was such a dramatic Adam and Eve caught in sin moment. That was just fascinating. So from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I don't know. It was interesting then. It's humbling too, because you see stuff like that online, and it can be easy as a believer. And I don't know, you know, I know we have people who listen to the podcast. Some would consider themselves believers. Some would consider themselves not, or reconstructing, or whatever. But you have that ideal of more moral superiority of like, well, at least I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And so what I think is interesting, Chris, would you mind just sharing kind of that quote from Spurgeon that you shared in your sermon? And I like it, because it's like when public moral failure happens, it is easy. I think it's easy for a lot of people, but it is easy for the believer to then gain this idea of moral superiority. And I think it's probably healthy for us to realize, like, I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're not as good as you think. But will you kind of unpack this as you were sharing it? And then, Brent, I want to hear your thoughts. Sorry, I'm not trying to monopolize this.
That was definitely.
I mean, he is the therapist.
That's it. Yeah. So there is a, one of my pastors years ago, when the affair or the sexual indiscretion between Monica Lewinsky and
Bill Clinton.
Thank you. I was like, what's his real name? Slick Willie, Bill Clinton came out, and the next Sunday, my pastor preached the sermon and started the sermon with, the difference between most of us and Bill Clinton is opportunity. Mm. And so he really taught through the Sermon on the Mount about, you know, the lusting in your heart. And so he was like, don't judge him just because he has more pressure and more temptation than you do. You can judge his sin is wrong, and we don't excuse that, but don't do that from some kind of moral high ground. You've not faced what he's had to face. So we at least have to be aware of that. Yeah, the Spurgeon quote is, if any man thinks ill of you, do not be angry with him, for you are worse than he thinks you to be. So the idea that that even when someone says something bad to us, negative to us, judges us, to recognize, yeah, the only reason they're judging us on this is because they don't know about the rest of it. That's probably much worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly true. I mean, I know that's true of me, and that's, you know, there are people in the world who know pretty much most of the depths of my depravity, but the whole world doesn't. And, mm-hmm. and yeah. so that's a, yeah, that's, so someone criticizes something small, I'm like, man, if you only knew,
yeah,
that would be, yeah. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah. So Bryn, what does this stir up for you as you're seeing this play out, from your kind of worldview ideas and understanding of things, and then also your relational connection with a lot of people? Kind of where do you go?
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts. I think some of the things that you've already said, but one of them is, yeah, like you're saying, your sin will find you out. So one day your sin will be revealed. It could quite possibly be in a way that you don't want it to be. Or, you know, is a surprise. It will always be in a way you don't want it to be, but could quite possibly be here on earth and ruin a lot of things. And I think people get to a point in their pride where they think that they're above being found out. Like they're good enough that they can lead double lives, or they're just good enough at, you know, directing their own lives, that they can have it all and not be caught. And I think that's interesting when you get to a point where you're brazen in your sin because you think that you're above getting caught. But I think it's heartbreaking because both of them have families, and it is heartbreaking. I mean, I think one of the things that it's easy to make fun of them, it makes really great memes. Mm-hmm. Some of them I honestly have laughed at, but when you think about, there's a lot of heartbreak behind this. And even from their point of view, yeah, they have made some really bad decisions. It is still something worth grieving when your sin is on display for the whole world. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, they didn't have it coming, but at the same time, it's still worth grieving of, right. Like, man, your personal mistakes are now known by people in most every country. That is horrific.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, in our men's student, I'm going to get his title wrong, student men's and planting pastor. That's close enough. One of the things that he said was, it is so interesting how the world has a double standard. And I thought that was such a good point of, everyone is so quick to judge them and be like, oh my gosh, can you believe, like, blah, blah, blah. And yet the world is also saying, follow your heart, you know, you do you,
right?
You know, pursue happiness. And it's like, those two things are a double standard. And I think it is interesting to me from just a reason standpoint. It's like, if we're saying to follow our heart and we're saying do what feels good, we have no grounds to then say, can you believe this couple? Like, right, we have exactly. No grounds.
Right.
So from just a moral standpoint, it's like, if you don't, we've talked about this 1,000 times, but if you don't have a foundation for truth, you don't have a foundation for truth, and you have no right to say someone can't do something just because all of a sudden you think it's horrible.
Mm-hmm. But it is interesting how even people who I would probably think would say follow your heart and stuff like that, there is just a level of like shock when that comes out.
Right. Everybody has their own threshold.
So it is really interesting. So you know you're talking about something to grieve, in that they're and what those families are probably grieving is relational breakdown.
And humiliation on top of that.
Totally. And then also like losing your job, losing your reputation. I'm also curious, taking a different, kind of branching off a little bit, but going to what has happened with Michael Tate and the Newsboys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You not only have kind of a public, it's not as public because it wasn't footage, but it was information that came out.
Yeah.
But then you not only grieve those things of like ruined reputation, ruined, you know, relationships.
Right.
You also grieve the loss of a leader who was maintaining a double standard.
Right.
Who we assume, at least, or allegedly.
No, he's now confessed to it.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. He's confessed to it. And that's the thing, the most intriguing thing about Michael Tate's example. So of those of you who grew up in my generation, Michael Tate is DC Talk. He's one of the three DC Talk guys who did Jesus Freak. And ironically, a song I'm going to, not ironically, realistically, maybe even prophetically, a song that I'll quote here in a second. But, and then who knew, I didn't know, that DC Talk, I mean, that Newsboys is a band that switches out. I knew that they'd switched out lead singers once. I didn't know that that was actually a kind of a common thing for them, as they switch out band members. Like, there's like none of the same band members that Newsboys were when I was a kid. None at all. And so...
Well, but Michael Tate took...
he took the lead
Peter
spot.
Peter Furler's spot from Newsboys, who was the... Yeah.
So that's what you discovered, is that he's... I knew him as DC Talk, and everybody kept talking about him as Newsboys. And I was like, yeah, they don't even know who he is. He was DC Talk. And like, oh, no, he's also the lead... He's now... Like, no, Peter Furler's lead singer of Newsboys. Anyway, yeah. I was just... My information was outdated. And so, you know, several people came forward and said there had been some unwanted sexual advances with him. Some people had come forward and said he felt like he was living a double life. When confronted with it, Tate's response was not, I'm not really a Christian. It was not, I'm deconstructing my faith. Mm-hmm. It was, I blew it. Like, this is sin, and I'm going to call it sin. And I am ashamed of my life choices and actions and make no excuse for them. I will simply call it what God calls it, sin. The accusations, which include accounts of cocaine, nudity, and sexual assault, quote, are largely true from him. So he has owned it, confessed it, and expressed the appropriate type of shame for it, and is seeking help over it, and is not. Does not seem to be deconstructing his faith.
Yeah.
It's that he was living out this double life that any human can. It doesn't mean that his beliefs were wrong or that he didn't really believe them. It just meant he was living a part of his life as though they weren't true, as though they weren't real. All of us do a little bit of that. He just apparently had a pretty expanded version. And it even doesn't sound like some that we hear about that you're later, you're like, I think they were delusional. Like, I think they were, like, they were just, it doesn't sound like he's trying to excuse away or defend. And so in a weird way, it's like his situation does not apply directly to kind of our mandate, because he isn't deconstructing his faith. However, I think when a religious leader falls, even authentically, so there are those who fall because they got busted with the fact that they were never really a religious leader. Yeah. They were a religious leader. They're never really a Christian.
Yeah.
Or who get busted at, you know, like, you know, the famous world pastor who, after his death, it came out that he had exploited women all over the world. So, sorry about that. And so I think there's a, this to me is very different. This is a, a fallen and broken human who, again, to quote it, sang in 1995 in DC Talk, sang a song called What If I Stumble, with the group. What if I stumble, and what if I fall, and what if I lose my step, and I make fools of us all? Will the love continue when my walk becomes a crawl? What if I stumble, and what if I fall? This song concept is, can even when we fall, even if we stumble, will we find comfort in Christ? Will we return to the family of God? Will all the different things that I feel like he's actually seems to be doing. Now, that may change. That information may become outdated. He may decide, I prefer my other life to my life with Christ. And
it's not hard authentic. Too, because it's like he did technically get caught and then confess. So that's always a hard conversation.
Oh, for sure.
But only God knows that, you know.
Yeah. How authentic is it? Christ very clearly, like, we judge the outside only he can judge the heart. And so this is a, from if someone is caught in sin, what response do you want to see? Well, it's this one. The only thing that is left out that I haven't heard is, and these are the men in my life who I've been talking to about this all along. Now they may be there, but he's not talked about that. Like, that would be, if anybody was caught in sin, you would want their response to be, yes, this is sin in my life. Yes, I fought against it. Yes, I have lost this battle many, many times. it's horrible, it is sin, I'm ashamed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can ask these four people that I've had in my life for the last decades that this has been something I've been fighting and working against. And
yeah,
like you would want that piece. I would want that piece to be there too. Mm-hmm. Now the exploitative part, if any of it was abusive or exploitative, then those people should have at some point come forward and put an end to it sooner. But and if it's just personal sin, you know, how someone engages with pornography or how somebody engages with money or food or something like that, then, and that comes out, and as humiliating as that would be, you would still want there to also be someone going, we've been praying with him or her for years on this.
Right.
You know,
and I think we talked about this. I remember us talking about this when the whole Austin Stone, Aaron Ivey came out. I remember you saying something about that of like, we didn't, you know, is this something that community knew about? Is this whatever? It's one thing that I was struck by was it was actually a Rich Mullins quote. And I watched a video of it. But this says this is a quote from him from Lufkin, Texas, in 1997. He said, "It's so funny being a Christian musician. It always scares me when people think so highly of Christian music, contemporary Christian music especially, because I kind of go, I know a lot of us and we don't know jack about anything. Not that I don't want you to buy our records and come to our concerts, I sure do, but you should come for entertainment. If you really want spiritual nourishment, you should go to church. You should read the scriptures." Right. And so I was like, one,
I was there for that concert.
You were?
I was there when he said that.
Oh, that's
isn't
awesome.
That cool?
That's really cool.
Sorry.
I'm not trying to, say you get a pass.
Right, right.
But it is interesting. I just wonder too, and I guess this kind of falls in line as I'm thinking about it, of deconstructing your faith in humanity is like, hey, I don't know where you stand on, man, I love the Newsboys. I've really clung to their lyrics over the years. And so, or DC Talk or whatever. And so I see this fall and this really shakes me because those things can happen. But I think it kind of falls in line with that response that I feel like we kind of keep coming back to is like, okay, is your faith in somebody, a Christian person or somebody who's saying, hey, I follow Christ, and are you treating them as your Messiah? Or is your faith built on the Messiah and the revealed word of God? And so I think, I don't know. I don't know what you would say to that, Bryn, kind of where your mind goes, but I think it is a modern temptation in our era to be like, oh well, I elevate somebody who is a believer or claims to be, but who is just a person. He puts his pants on just like me, and so you know what I'm saying. And so it's like, and I feel like there is a danger, clearly, for that, because when those people inevitably make a mistake, then it's like, oh my goodness, well, what am I doing? And it's like, okay, well.
Yeah, I think, well, no, I agree. I think it is related, like you're saying, I think it is related to the deconstructing conversation, even if it's not related to Michael Tate deconstructing, because whenever, like we've talked about in the past, whenever you have a prominent person that has influenced other people have something like this come up, it does impact people's faith. And I think that's why you have to have these conversations. It creates a lot of questions that there are no easy answers to. Like Chris was saying, you know, does he love the Lord? Is, you know, has he been living a double life? Has he been fighting it well? Like, what does this mean? Does that mean, you know, like all of those faith questions. And, you know, can I trust other people that are leading me? Like all of those things. And so I think, I think it's worth wrestling with just from that standpoint. And we've talked about that some on previous episodes of just like, what do you do when someone you've been following or led by has a serious moral failure? But yeah, that's kind of my thought of like, I think it's worth wrestling through. I mean, it is, it is sad. I think it's worth wrestling through for that reason, just because this has continued to happen because we're human and we're broken. And like we've talked about in the past, I think it's a great charge to those of us who are following Jesus to have things in place, no matter what your position is, to fight sin well, because it never just affects you. And the more influence you have, the more people it's going to affect, which seems like a no-duh statement. But I think we've talked about in the past how, in the church culture, it seems like it's inverted, where it's like the more influence you have and the more prominent you are, the less accountability you have, because,
oh yeah,
you know, there's shame around it. And even this, you know, I mean, it is easy, as much as we talk about this, it's even easy to be like, oh, but that person sings all these songs and they travel and sing for Jesus. They, you know, why would they need accountability? And why would they need, they're, you know, they're obviously in love with Jesus because they sing about him all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think we invert that, like we've talked about, and we have to push against that as a Christian culture of like, no, I mean, everyone needs this.
Yes.
The more prominent you are, the more you have to be on guard. Yes. I think, I don't know, Chris, what are you?
Oh gosh. Yeah. The more power you have, the more freedom you have, the more whatever you have, the
influence,
yeah, wealth, privilege, mm-hmm, pick the word, the more accountability you need. And mm-hmm, I think scripture clearly teaches that. I mean, it's obviously much more difficult for the wealthy, powerful person to enter into the kingdom of heaven than for the poor, mm-hmm, powerless person. And I'm not making that up. Jesus said that. I mean, that's so like, I think absolutely the more influence that we have, mm-hmm, the more accountability we should surround ourselves with, and the more, yeah, and it becomes more difficult to find people who will tell you the truth about, mm-hmm, who you are and what's going on, mm-hmm, with you. And I think that it, you know, because more and more people are like, oh, but my paycheck depends on this, or my, you know, my whatever. This is a challenge. And so it's,
my band
depends on this, yeah, or our golden albums, or, mm-hmm, you know, that kind of stuff is, and once someone begins to feel that sense of, okay, this is a tough situation for me to be honest about how I'm doing with this. And because if I let people know, I mean, I mentioned that I have a couple of over shepherds. I've mentioned that before, because when I went through a tough time, I ended up being fine through that. But there was a moment in the midst of that where I realized I was very tempted to make some very big decisions, which might've been very foolish because of the difficulty of the situation. I shouldn't be making, mm-hmm, really big decisions, but I was very tempted to. Mm-hmm. And so I went to, and I realized everyone who I go to about this has an interest in it. Like, mm-hmm, me being okay, everyone in my life was like, I kind of need you to be okay. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm, you know, including my most intimate friendships and my wife, like going to her and saying, I'm not sure I'm okay. Well, that's not something she's going to be able to engage with dispassionately. Like, okay, mm-hmm, well, let's just discuss that. And so having counselors, consultants, and a couple of over shepherds who, if I'm not okay, honestly, they're still fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I needed that. And so I feel like that's something that people who are in leadership positions, yeah, responsibility, that kind of stuff need.
Mm-hmm. It becomes really easy. And you don't really consider it when you're not, yeah, you know, it's like when it doesn't really fall to you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really interesting.
Well, and there's that narrative that which I appreciate you push back on a lot as a pastor, Chris, but the narrative of, if you love Jesus enough, then there are certain things that are off the table for you. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm, I feel like that is a really prominent conversation and thought in church culture of like, well, if you're following Jesus, then obviously you wouldn't do X, Y, Z, maybe A, B, C, but like not X, Y, Z. And therefore we create this shame and this hiddenness, and we make it where people almost can't be honest about those things because it's a taboo sin for people who are following Jesus. And so it's like, obviously you can't struggle with that. And I think that does a disservice to all of our brothers and sisters that we're walking with.
Yeah, I agree.
So
there's one, another one. And we also had another one that's come up.
Yeah. And so this is like less of what you would maybe call a moral failure, but it is something in the news cycle talking about Chip and Joanna Gaines. Is that where you were going to go?
Yeah, that's exactly.
And I think it's especially interesting because I have seen, and so this is the something that I need to do some more research on, but the headline is that Baylor invested money in like inclusion,
mm-hmm,
of LGBTQ in church. I apologize. I could really be botching that headline. What I wanted to understand, so two things. What I wanted to understand was like, okay, about the whole Chip and Joanna thing.
Right.
you know, one, I just want to get your take on it. Two, I want to see like, okay, what is actually happening here? Like, is this a business thing? Is this like, is this a, hey, we believe this is morally okay thing?
Right.
Or, and then the other side of it was, I was really curious, and I think I just put these together because they are in Waco. Baylor is in Waco. They're heavily involved with Baylor. I'm also curious, like, what does that mean for Baylor? In that, not necessarily for them, but like, what do they mean by inclusion? Like, are they, hey, how do we engage with people who struggle with these things?
Right.
Or is it, how can we cater to these things?
Right.
And so I don't know if y'all have looked up that as much. And so, and I apologize if how I'm handling that could be offensive to someone who's listening. I'm not trying to jump to a conclusion. That has just been like my, because I've seen some people respond to the headline in, my goodness, I loved Baylor. And now
interesting.
I can't handle this. And I'm like, I haven't read it.
Yeah.
But is it like, are we trying to help people and engage people with the gospel who struggle in that way?
Yeah.
And who are in that spot? Or yeah. Are we saying, hey, this is fine. And so we want more churches to be okay with this.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I'd love to hear what Bryn has heard about it, what she knows about it. Maybe you don't. Maybe when you've got a newborn and you're potty training, you're not up on that kind of stuff. I don't know. It seemed to me like you might be more aware of some of the pop culture than I would normally be. My wife has brought this to my attention much faster than I would have learned about it on my own, for sure.
Are you talking like Baylor or the Gaines specifically?
The Gaines. Yeah, Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Well, I'll be honest. I haven't super followed the Gaines. I mean, I'm aware of them, but I don't follow them a ton. So I just have done... a surface dive. That's contradictory, but I've looked into it since it's become a thing. So I haven't followed them for years. And I think what it seems, and I could be wrong, but what it seems like is at one point they did take a big stand in some areas when it comes to LGBTQ conversations in the past. And I think that is... And from what I knew before, it was kind of like, oh yeah, they're family friendly. They promote family values. I wasn't super shocked when I heard about it because I was like, I didn't know if they were like a solid Christian couple publicly, but it seems like they probably were are trying to present that themselves as that way, which I didn't realize. So I think two things. One, I think people seem disappointed because they have taken a stance in the past and seem to be changing their stance. Two, people are upset with the way they handled it.
Right.
So they seem to be, from what I've read, and like I said, I could be wrong, but one is they made this decision made some statements about acceptance and inclusion. And then when their followership pushed back, they weren't super kind about it.
Right.
At least Chip wasn't. And I think that's why people are frustrated, is it's something that they're changing their stance on as people who presented themselves as conservative Christian influencers. And then two, instead of saying, hey, you're right, I just have a change of opinion, or I'm come to see things differently, whatever they could have said, even if they have changed their stance, they see Chip was a little bit harsh in the way that he responded.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. Even if you decide to change your views on controversial Christian issues. So that's kind of some context that I think I've read, hopefully correctly, but as far as kind of unpacking what it means for Christian culture, I think my first reaction is like, I'm not super surprised. And it's nothing to do with Chip and Joanna. It's just the culture that we live in. There's right. so much pressure when you are a Christian influencer to also present this spirit of like love and care for everyone. And even if you love Jesus, you have this pressure to quote unquote love people in the way that the world will receive well. And I have no doubt that pressure is really strong. And so I'm not saying it's not a bummer that this happened. I just am like, this is the world we live in. Like, this happens a lot when it comes to Christian celebrities falling under this pressure. Yeah. I don't know. What are y'all's thoughts? I've talked for a while.
Pardon the pun, but I do think it's like, what do you have to gain and what do you have to lose?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And for somebody who's engaged in entertainment and visual, I don't even know what to say about that necessarily. I don't know exactly how to, but it's like there's so much public eye involved that it's, I don't know. Also, I realized that Baylor has rescinded that grant now that I've looked it up.
Interesting. That's so interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't even address Baylor, but.
No. Well, he was asking specifically about the Gaineses, but I do think this idea of being on the right side of history is something that we continue to see played out in our culture. And then you have, when you have somebody who someone would consider maybe a faith leader or a Christian or whatever, when they take the stance of culture, then there's an, you know, there's outrage. There's a lot of, and I think some of that from the church is like, man, what are you standing for? What are you doing? But yeah, I liked what you said, Bryn. Chris, do you have anything you would add?
Well, I'm not even sure we've communicated, just in case someone doesn't know, that what happened is the Gaines, through their Magnolia company.
Yeah.
So the Magnolia Network is actually owned by Discovery. And so the Discovery Network owns them, and the show is on HBO, is going to be on HBO Max. And so my impression is, and again, I agree that I think Chip, especially in his responses, I have to assume, so this is the therapist in me now, that Chip was so ready for this negative response that the clapback from him was way too fast and way too sudden. But it was because he was not naive enough to think there wasn't going to be a response to this. But there was a TV show where they take three families out of the modern world, and they have a certain amount of time, I don't know the exact amount of time, to kind of learn how to do the things, store up enough food for winter, and like that's the reality based thing. And one of the three families is a gay couple, two gay men, and their twin sons. And I actually don't even know if these are the biological sons of either one of the men, or I don't know the nature of their relationship, if they're adopted or if, you know, whatever. So anyway, but so of course it should have been, I mean, anyone in that situation should have known if Chip and Joanna are caught off guard by this, that would be a surreal surprise to me. Is of course the response is going to be what some people, and this is in fact what my wife and I said immediately, was we've really liked the material they've put out in the past, partially because we didn't have to edit it for our kids.
Right.
And there's so little that you can edit, that you can do anymore, where you just can let your kids watch it without going, okay, hey, oh, you know, that's so rare nowadays in even cartoons and stuff. And so the thought that there would be this messaging, implicit or not, in something that they had attached their name to, which is, hey, this is normal. Now, on top of that, what I will also agree with Chip Gaines on is, in the world, this is normal. And so, these are lost people. And so that we could always have the same conversation that we do about any time we see a sinful lifestyle embraced in the world, which is, yes, that is lost people, of course, don't have a reason to not embrace a sinful lifestyle. Like, that's just... we don't. And so Chip's, one of Chip's points, which I totally agree with, is it's not our place to judge lost people. And and I actually appreciate it. What's interesting is Ginger and I were, my wife and I were talking about how this would have been really, I think it would have been really easy for Chip to respond in a way that kind of like, do you guys remember, you guys may not remember when Mike Huckabee ran for president and there was this big funny report that came out, and I used to have a copy of it because I actually quoted it in a sermon, that it was like the New York Times that had unquote uncovered this code that Mike Huckabee spoke in that only his followers could understand.
Oh, that's right. And it was like church.
It was all Bible verses. Yeah. Like, it was like him referencing a Bible verse. And they were like, oh, there's this secret code that the rest of us can't speak, that he puts out this, like, he'll use the term Good Samaritan. and everyone knows what he means, but only, I mean, all of his people know what he means, but the rest of us don't know what he means, and it's a code, and so like, and it turned out by like largely Bible verses and church words, right? Well, I told, you know, Ginger and my wife and I were talking about it and saying this would have been a great opportunity for Chip to respond in a way that would have still seemed gentle and kind in the midst mm-hmm. of this population, because I suspect once they signed on to Discovery and HBO Max, that HBO Max and Discovery were who were making these decisions. And then Chip and Joanna, their only option at that point might have either been to break contract or to whatever, which again, maybe they should have done. I that's a tough moment, I think. Or to say, and one of his quotes I actually kind of liked, he said it this way. He said, there were, his response was to people, talk, ask questions, listen, maybe even learn. It is too much to ask of modern American Christian culture. Judge first, understand later or never. It's a mm-hmm. sad Sunday when non-believers have never been confronted with hate or vitriol until they are introduced to a modern American Christian. So again, I feel like there's a little bit of the Mike Huckabee code in there. Non-believers receive hate from the Christians versus love. And I feel like if that had been his first and main response to say, okay, we're trying to decide how to lead and shepherd these people who God has put in our presence. And some of them know him, and we shepherd them one way, and some of them don't. And we want to shepherd them a different way. Like, I think that a lot of the Christian world would have gone like, oh, so they're hoping to influence this situation. They're hoping to have a positive, not an approval, not like, I feel like there were, you know, the secret code, that there were plenty of opportunities, ways that he could have communicated that would have let the rest of us as Christians know, at least, okay, here's what they're trying to do with this. Instead, his response was a simple, don't judge. That was his first response, was just a simple, don't judge. And that felt radically like he's taking the Bible out of context, like he's what, I mean, he ended up quoting, I think correctly, 1 Peter 3:15, about being prepared in and out of season to give a response, but to do so respectfully and gently, so that, you know, people, when they blaspheme or, you know, persecute, whatever, blaspheme later, will feel bad about it, essentially. And like, so if he could have started with this, like, they should have released first, in my opinion, here's what we're doing. Here's our strategy. Here's why we chose to keep our name connected to this experience. Is it doesn't change our views. It doesn't change our opinions about what the Bible teaches, but it was an opportunity. It has been an opportunity to get to know people, to listen to them, and to have a loving influence on some people who would not otherwise experience that. That, I think, they could have defanged 90% of what has happened. Now, I still don't know if I agree with their decision. That's different. What would I do if I was them creating a TV show and it has this opportunity to engage with these issues, and then, you know, HBO Max or Discovery or somebody says, well, one of the couples has to be gay. Mm-hmm. Would that have been when I said, well, then I can't, as much as I would love to be part of it, I now can't be a part of it? Or would I have said, okay, I'm going to take this opportunity to try and engage in them? And I don't know that there's necessarily a wrong answer, but of course there's going to be a negative response to that. And if you're not ahead of that, that's unwise. And instead to be responding the way they did.
I think the other piece is, like you're saying, he didn't confirm that they still believe in the traditional Christian sexual ethic. And so his response, plus the lack of confirming that, is I think what has it's left a lot of space for interpreting what they're standing for in this,
right?
And I think that's why people are frustrated. It's, yeah, his response was quick, and like you're saying, some of it was biblical, but like out of context.
Yes.
And vague enough where it seems like he, and we don't know his heart, but it seems like he's trying to not say, hey, we still believe this. This is what we've chosen to do. It's just vague enough. And so it leaves space for people to assume, oh, you've changed your opinions on things. You're not standing for whatever anymore, you know. Which I think, I mean, two things, like you're saying, they are part of Discovery and HBO Max, which are in no way Christian networks. And not saying Christians shouldn't interact with those platforms or engage with them or partner with them, but you have to know that at some point your values are going to come into conflict.
Right.
If you're under contract with or working closely with people of the such a different worldview. And also, if their views have changed, that also happens when you're in close communication and community with people who,
right,
you know, have a different worldview, and you're influenced by the people you're around. So who knows which is which? But
yes,
yeah, I think, like you're saying, the vagueness and the lack of affirming what they still believe left a lot of room for people to be upset. Yeah.
I think it doesn't help that in the secular world, like that people have come forward and crowed about it in the secular world. Like they think they just mm-hmm. won a battle for the hearts of some Christian icons. There are very mm-hmm. few Christian icons out there, leaders in the community of, you know, of this type of community of media presenters and that kind of stuff. There just aren't a lot of Christians. And this was a couple who, though maintaining very strong Christian values, still somehow managed to pry success out of the world with this. And the response from like the LGBTQ world has been, I just saw a quote that just said, referred to the experience as a great, amazing opportunity to normalize same-sex couples and same-sex families.
I think so that's how the they guy see that, it. That couple is the one that said that, the couple that's being featured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they saw this as, hey, we're influencing the Christian culture. Mm-hmm. We're going to help the Christian culture understand this is okay. They're going to see this and go, this is healthy and good and normal. So they see it as proselytizing. Mm-hmm. And so, but that to me is like, did you get that's all the questions. Did you guys get duped into doing this? Did you sign a bad contract for this? Did you know this going in and you chose to do it anyway? And what was your motivation? Is it that you've changed? Like you said, and there are just so many questions left open. And when you don't interpret yourself for people, they will interpret you for themselves. And they've left mm-hmm. some to this open. I'm glad they go to scripture with their responses. That implies at least that they see scripture as authoritative. But again, it's a tough sell. So let me read another quote from him. This is why you get confusion. It's not about what color this is Chip again. It's not about what color your skin is, how much money you have in the bank, your political affiliation, sexual orientation, gender, nationality, or faith. That's all fascinating, but it cannot add or take away from the reality that we're already pulling for you. We are not about to get in the nasty business of throwing stones at each other. Don't ask us to, because we don't play that way. Mm-hmm. And again, at its face value, under the right context, that might be a very appropriate thing to say. But the question is, how does his audience interpret something that's as unclear as that? Could we as Christians, as we talked about, we went deep into this question of is the Bible, what was the word we used?
Immoral
by today's standards. And one of the topics mm-hmm. was in regards to sex. And then we unpacked that for several, mm-hmm. several episodes mm-hmm. and tried to pull no punches one way or the other. Let's look at what it really says and what this is about. And that was, of all those different topics, slavery, sexism, et cetera, that was the one that we came to. Essentially, the answer is yes, by today's standards. If you judge the Bible by today's standards, the Bible would be immoral in that it condemns same-sex behavior as mm-hmm. sin and immoral. And therefore, because this culture affirms same-sex behavior as moral and sometimes even highly virtuous, like it's the apex version of love, almost every episode of Psychology Today, which I automatically get sent to my office, just because I'm an advertiser on their website, which there you go, there's maybe a connection to that, but is always an article about how to really learn to love well, written by a gay or lesbian person, because they're the ones who really understand it. And so in my mind, that's an intriguing, that's the world we live in. And so we just live in a world that is divided there, and they're trying to kind of take that third. It sounds to me like Chip and Joanna are trying to take that third stance. That, like, I have several friends who are part of a church down in Austin that's their kind of their mantra is, our church takes no stance on LGBTQ issues, biblical or otherwise. And so each person gets to decide what they believe about it.
But how do you get to pick and choose that?
That's tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
They've just decided to.
Because we've had those conversations.
Oh, yeah. I would
before.
Be all about that. Believe me.
If we could, if it's like, if I could affirm it, if I could reconcile that in the Bible.
If I could believe what feels best to me.
Right.
That's right.
And so that is interesting.
It's tough. And it does create a controversy, and it is difficult. And so our response at this point has really just kind of been to pray for them. And I've gotten to meet them and one time got to shake hands and talk about pocket tools with Chip. and I have appreciated their ministry. And in my opinion, this does not end any of that inherently. It just becomes a more complicated conversation that is kind of heartbreaking that I get. Mm-hmm. Like, had the few years of silence begun to wear on them, that they couldn't break back into the media community, and this was the price. And that's, you're tempted to wonder about that. I do think we ought to comment also on, so one, once again, remember, we, whether it's Michael Tate or Chip and Joanna Gaines or the couple at the Coldplay concert, like, we don't put our faith in humans.
Things.
All right. Very different. Aren't they amazing how radically different they are? They might inspire someone to deconstruct the fallenness of humans and that you just can't trust people, or even people, Christian leaders, it turns out, are just as jacked up as other people, or that people may pay a price or not communicate it well or compromise. Or I just think one of the things I immediately thought when people were responding, I was like, right, because Chip is obviously, being a home deconstruction and reconstruction guy, is fully prepared for this type of communication nightmare. Like, he's been well trained. Like, no, this is a guy who tears down houses and builds them back. Like, that's, to put him in this situation and ask him to handle this in an incredibly sophisticated way. He's super bright. Obviously, he's very intelligent, but that doesn't mean he's trained on having this type of communication. And I think clearly he wasn't prepared for it, or was over prepared. One of the two. He was either prepared
to
fight.
Or he needs to fire his publicist.
There's a lot of stuff there. But I will also say, we published, I don't know when this is going to go out, but we published recently an older article or an older episode about human suffering and the difficulties and challenges of that. And so, another thing that we talked about, that this is one of the leading causes of deconstruction, is other people deconstructing or failing, letting us down. And it turns out that our faith was in them. And we've always, one of our almost borderline mantras on this podcast has been, you do need to deconstruct your faith in humans. And instead reconstruct some faith in God himself.
And also, can I add something to that? I think also, I mean, completely agree. I think the second piece of this is, like we've said 100 times, it's also why it's so important to know why you believe what you believe, because at some point you will face pressure to believe something different. And the narrative, like you're saying, the narrative of the world is trying to redefine what love is, what acceptance is. And if you are not convinced that God's way and ethic and way to life is best, then you will fall. I'm not saying this is what's happened to them, but it is tempting to want to take the path that feels most loving. And if you haven't done that really hard work of saying, like, no, this is what God says and it is truly best and loving, then at some point we're all going to face that pressure of, like, culturally, like you're saying, this is a hard thing to engage with. And it starts to affect you in a deconstructed aspect of, like, man, is that what God says? Is he actually good to say that? Like, how can that be loving, and all those questions? And so just another reason to do the hard work, so that when we all face that pressure to do the thing that feels, you know, most acceptable or most comfortable or whatever our reason is specifically, that we'll know why we believe it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's key. And I think that goes back to that, is that we have to be prepared to know what our beliefs are, and it can't be dependent on another human. We're just asking for trouble. So that's been our push from day one. And because there's plenty of questions to ask about, like why a loving God allows hundreds of people to die in floods in Texas, including ones at camps where children sit and worship him. Why would he? Like, there's plenty of hard questions about God and God himself and the issues of dealing with God without complicating, like, well, but what does it mean when people fall? Well, what it means is people fall and they're going to, and all of us are flawed at the very best. And if you knew us better, you would know just how deeply flawed we can be. All of us have things that if it were revealed, we would be covering our face and turning away from the camera. All of us have those things. And so that's why we need a savior to come in from the outside and save us, because it's not going to be us that does it. So that's been a big part of our purpose in this all along, has been. And it has been intriguing how we've been doing this now, what, 4 or 5 years, and there are still always examples of leaders who fall, Christian leaders who fall and who deconstruct and who walk away. And I feel like we may be, you know, these are examples that we will never run out of, and I think that's exactly what scripture would teach. So anyway, this has been great. Yeah. Hope it's been helpful to people even if they're just engaging with us as we talk through it. If you've got questions or specific things like that, I had another idea that we ought to talk about at some point. If you guys haven't caught up on The Chosen, I haven't, but I thought that might be, have we done an episode on The Chosen? I think that might be a fun thing. Yeah. I've had some people ask about Chosen controversies and that kind of stuff. That might be a fun thing, really, that people are building their faith or really being challenged in their faith. And so I think that'd be a good one for us to talk about at some point. Maybe we can soon.
I think that'd be awesome.
Cool. Alrighty.
All right.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Reconstructed Faith. If you enjoyed what you heard or were challenged, please leave us a review. It'll help other people find us. If you have questions or a topic you'd like to hear discussed, shoot me an email at info@southspring.org. Reconstructed Faith is a resource of South Spring Baptist Church. Remember, don't give up, trust God, search for answers.